We are proud to announce that we have another sponsor here at Why Didn't They Laugh? And if you support them, you support us. And this is a good one to support because they will support you with cash. And everyone wants cash. Let's talk money. We all need more because we like good times. Like if you want a bike or a chair or maybe a Sprite. Truth is, sometimes honest, hardworking folks need a little extra cash. We all do. For example, I got a new microphone because if you listen to old episodes, they used to suck. And I needed cash for it. Some banks don't always make it easy and fast, and those people will look at you in a weird way because you're not wearing a necklace of pearls or whatnot. But I'll tell you who does make it easy. Our new sponsor, Avant. Finally, there's a company who gets it. People like money, but they don't like banks. Wells Fargo away. Avant provides access to personal loans from $1,000 to $35,000. That's 35,000 candy bars. And that's with tax in one of those states with high tax. You simply go to AvantOffer.com, check your competitive rates. Checking your rate is risk-free, no effect on your FICO score. I don't even know what my FICO score is. Hopefully it's 69, because that would be funny. Complete your application in minutes, and the funds could be with you in your pocket, ready to party with, as soon as tomorrow. So do that, because tomorrow is a lot sooner than the day after tomorrow. See how easy and convenient borrowing is through AvantOffer.com. Avant will give you a $50 Amazon.com gift card after you make just one payment on time. That's it. Just pay your bill normally and you get a free gift card. Bank of America doesn't do that. They just give you bad looks and judgments. Go to AvantOffer.com and enter promo code LAUGH. Enter promo code LAUGH. That's AvantOffer.com. That's L-A-U-G-H. It's also pronounced That's an actual laugh for those of you guys that are following along. AvantOffer.com, promo code LAUGH. And now I'm about to read the disclaimer in a voice I've always wanted to do ever since I was a little kid. Loans made by West Bank Funds are generally deposited by ACH for delivery next business day, 8 approved by 4:30 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday. FICO is a registered trademark for Fair Isaac Corporation. Amazon is not a sponsor of this promotion. Other restrictions apply. See website for details.
Why?
Hello, welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I'm your host, Owen Benjamin, and we are live. Actually, not live. I couldn't even say it with a straight face. But we're above the Hollywood Improv, and I'm saying live because I can hear people doing comedy, and I felt pretty live. We have a great guest today. Just did the interview with him. He's an amazing individual, Peter Melman. He was one of the writers for Seinfeld for years. He wrote the Yada Yada episode and came up with shrinkage, the term. Which is great because now there's a reason, there's a word for it when you look like your cock isn't grand or legendary like it typically looks. You know, when your cock is like not legendary. The interview is hilarious. The first like 5 minutes, we're just kind of like sizing each other up because he's very like Stephen Wrighty, like Larry Davidy. And then once he gets going, he's one of the funniest humans alive and really, really nice and kind. But I just met him when we first started interviewing, and the dude is like comedy royalty with writing, and you can tell he just doesn't give a shit unless he does give a shit. And then he started giving a shit about halfway through. First half, don't think he gave a shit. Second half, we became bros. So before we get to that, I'd like to just go over the fact that I am doing, I'm cutting this documentary right now called 60 Minutes in 7 Days. I've been putting some videos up on Facebook, Owen Benjamin Comedy on Facebook, because I was trying to write a new hour in a week with the help of you guys and friends of mine would send videos in, Why Didn't They Laugh podcast at gmail.com. And thank you guys so much because it was a blast. And I'm just going to let you in on one little bit here. I was working on a thing about Halloween. I talked about it last week, I believe, about trying to crack the code of cultural appropriation, where it's a culture, not a costume. I mean, it drove me to the point of insanity where I obsessed about it nonstop. My Instagram got taken over by it. My buddy does stand up in Romania, and I can't stop thinking about how the vampire outfit bothers Romanians because they're literally mocking Vlad Tepes or whatever. He's like, He's like the most famous ruler in the history of Romania. You're doing a mockery and calling him like a bloodthirsty bat. Like, imagine if someone dressed as Mao Zedong with like a rice hat and like big teeth and was like, oh, I bring all communism. It's way more offensive to just dress as a vampire. So, you know, it's the same with ghosts. That offends my dead relatives. They're ghosts. You see how it never ends? I just want to wear a fun, festive sombrero and not have some asshole at a bar tell me that they're offended because their gardener is Mexican. I'm serious. Mexicans don't get mad. I'm a stand-up comic. I'll do 400 people. Half of them are Mexican. They're dying laughing. I'm doing bits about how they look like Ewoks. They're like shooting guns off in the air. I'm married a goddamn Mexican. All right, anyway. They love me because they know that I need their coat. I need the brown. I'm too white. The sun is an enemy. I'm dead serious. It's like they need my height bad, and I need their skin melon, the skin pigment, because, you know, my people aren't prepared for the sun, and most of the earth is covered in sun, and I have to wear cakes. I have to cake SPF on, and I know that, you know, blue eyes can look really cool in a photo shoot, but they're not good at all naturally. So I'm really pumped that my children hopefully will have brown eyes and slightly darker skin, but will be taller so they don't just have to play soccer. But Mexicans are wonderful people. Another bit that I've been working on with them is about how you have to put the before every. I'm trying to learn Spanish, and it's like el Niño is the little boy. So El is masculine, and then La Luna is feminine, like the moon. And it's always hard to remember every noun having a wiener or a vagina. Because when you're, you know, English language, Swedish, Japanese, there's no gender to the nouns. It's just very functional. And you can kind of see it in the cultures, you know. The Vikings and the Japanese are very like, you know, they'll fly their boats or planes into things efficiently. They stopped doing that, thank God. But the Spaniards, el, la, you know, so I didn't even realize it was happening during the show, but there was a Mexican table up front. I was like, how do you say table? Is it like table? Because I took French like an idiot. And they were like, mesa, la mesa. And I was like, oh, it's also la comida. And then it naturally was like, oh, that makes sense because a woman brings your food to your table. And that got a big laugh because at first they tried to get mad and then they realized I didn't write the damn language. I'm just reporting it as a 35-year-old Caucasian trying to learn it. Like a bear is a man, el oso, because you picture a bear, you picture a big hammer on him. El Presidente, of course, that's an L because what woman could be president, huh, Mexicans? It's a very sexist language. But I'm, you know, there's a lot of change happening very quickly. Like, there is no transgendered the. Like, there's no the for the cisgender. So that has to change, you know? That has to change. I'm just kidding. It doesn't. It's fine. So I was working on this thing about sexy nurse outfits offending Filipino moms. And it didn't work the first night. And I think it was because on the drive home, and I also did that werewolves offend Armenians. And so my wife was like, well, that offends Armenian women because apparently they have issues with waxing and hair that I don't know about. I'm coming from the perspective that I wish I had a better beard. I've always been beard jealous. I have a lot of beard envy. So when I say someone's hairy, I'm assuming I'm talking about a dude because I'm not being a dick, and I wish I had the beard. Like, I don't know why that would come across as offensive to anybody. I think a lot of times offense comes from when people think you're being a dick when you're not. And I think that people just assume if you're a white male, you're a dick. And 90% of the time, we're not. So I was doing this thing about Filipino nurses. One, I don't know if everyone realizes how many nurses are Filipinos. And also, like, people just think you're being a dick when a nurse is a great profession. So I was in Brea and there's a lot of Filipinos. So I knew I was gold because they knew what their parents do. And I started about, because I really did get the shit beat out of me once by a Filipino guy who was 5'4". They're tough as nails. So I did this story first.
And I think everyone should use this. Well, even dudes that can beat the hell out of me, which is a ton of them, right? Filipinos, they're fucking tough. They're oddly tough. Those little bastards will beat the hell out of you. It's happened. I got beat up by a 5'4" Filipino. I got the fuck beat out of me. They don't give a shit.
I'm making a Raymond.
Because all their moms are fucking nurses. So they're like, they can just get fixed up. I'm dead serious.
Okay, at this point, a Filipino dude stood up and fist bumped me because his dad was a nurse, and then another one said her mom was a nurse. It's literally, the nursing community is super Filipino, which is something to be proud of because it's one of the best professions you can have. That's why the story about getting beat up by the Filipino, I think that one of the reasons they're so tough and fearless is because their moms can patch them up so quickly when they're kids. So when I did that joke, that allowed me to now do my Halloween joke because now people know I'm not coming from it from a bad place. Although I truly don't understand how someone could assume that saying Filipinos are nurses could possibly be a bad place. That's like saying, I mean, I don't even have to give examples. That's preposterous. But it's the same with saying that Armenians are hairy, being like, well, women work hard on their hair. Of course I'm talking about men, and of course I have beard envy. Of course. I wish I had a rockin' beard. I look like a terrorist with cancer. I'm serious. I'm like the terrorist where everyone's like, he's going through chemo. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm still like legit. Like I'm still a scary terrorist. Everyone's like, yeah, but ever since you've been going through chemo, like your beard isn't very intense. Because I have too much body size. I think that follicles get too sparse. So here's my Halloween bit. And now... Let's take a little listen and see what happens.
It's funny what people say is racist and then what I believe is actually racist. Like the Halloween shit is insane. To be like, don't dress like that. It offends people. Like, where does it end? It's like, don't dress like a werewolf because, you know, it offends Armenian men. They're hairy motherfuckers. Don't dress like a sexy nurse, it offends Filipino moms.
And that was the micro, that audio was just through the mic. Like people really got into the Filipino mom joke once I established that I had been beaten up by a Filipino. So, and I don't know why they have to spell it with an F. I mean, I guess it's rebellious against the Spanish conquistadors. Because Filipino obviously is talking about King Philip, and they had a proud culture before that. And so I guess the rebellion is spelled with an F. And then this one Filipino I started talking to was saying that they're not Asian, they're Pacific Islander. So by the end, I was closing, and I'd also got a good rep going with this Japanese gentleman. And right before the closing song, I just dropped that Japan is a fucking island in the Pacific Ocean. And that we can all calm down. Guess you had to be there on that one. But some of the best new material I have going is about my wife and family life. Like that's the gold mine. That's one reason why I did all this. I wanted a controlled burn. Comedy has this weird thing where there's a delay where your real life doesn't match your current life because there's like a 6 to 8 month writing period. So when you first start dating someone, your jokes are still single for 6 to 8 months. And then at that point in time, you're now just, you just started dating someone and it's 6 to 8 months later and you're always like in this time warp. And I got married and my wife got pregnant so quickly in my life, like literally within a month and a half of each other, that I was like, I got to just get into this quick. And as the, a lot of forest rangers will burn sections of the forest to allow old growth to start growing. So I did that. I just burned a lot of my act and I just wanted to do new stuff. So a lot of it has to do with that. And I will be playing more of those clips, but hopefully I will have that up somewhere to be viewed in a week or two. And that's going to be a good time. And this book, I mean, I'm obsessing over it, but Sapiens, I'm going to put it in the show description. Ah, man. Okay, a lot of the illusions, like that it's the individual against the state, or the, you know, the individual against it. The state is the only reason there is individuals. that without the state, there's no protection to be an individual. You had to live tribally with families. It's all one giant illusion. It's pretty, I'm still on the fence whether or not I'm recommending it. People keep emailing me and Facebooking me about what books to read because I've reviewed probably 50 books on this thing. And they turn out pretty good. People usually like the recommendations. This one, it's like, it's such a rabbit hole. It starts when we're monkeys and it ends with, you know, the potential collapse due to consumerism. Ah, man. I don't know if I recommend it. I'm also reading something called Mating in Captivity about, you know, monogamy and how to stay a legend. I didn't get it because I have a need for it, but a friend of mine recommended it, and it's fairly interesting. Mating in Captivity. Like, for example, if you're in a long-term relationship, try not cuddling one night, and then you'll just pound on each other. You got to have a little bit of that distance. And it's narrated by this woman with the writer. She has this very cool, she's a sex therapist who talks like this. So I don't know if what she's saying is bullshit or I just trust that accent. I don't know. But yeah, you gotta read Sapiens. You gotta read Sapiens. Like, for example, we're slaves to wheat. I obsessed over that with the Sam Tripoli episode, but it's pretty true. You know, it's like what we gave up for agriculture, what women gave up. That's when women started becoming second class citizens was because of wheat. They didn't used to be. They used to have the power. And then they became, just read the goddamn book. It's pretty crazy. I mean, of course, I can always recommend the Malcolm Gladwells of the world. It makes you think a little differently. But this book will take your brain out of your head and it'll fuck it with its penis. Okay, America. Okay, this is something interesting. Like, America was found by Columbus. So why isn't it called Columbia? Because Columbus had the hubris to not admit that it wasn't Asia. That's why they called them Indians. And he thought that he was near Japan. So he never called it a new world. Guess who did? Amerigo Vespucci. The reason he got his name on the whole deal, I used to think it was bullshit that just the map maker kind of got in there. He was the first one to admit he didn't know. And that's a lesson we can all take to the bank. Amerigo Vespucci was like, it's a new world that we don't know. And because of that insight in a time of hubris, North and South America, both named after him and not Christopher Columbus, he has what, District of Columbia? It's bullshit. It's not even a fucking state. It's a district. I can make a district of this table. I can. A district's an invented thing. A district. A school district. Ours was named after Leighton. No one even knows who the fuck that is. Columbus is a liar and a cheat and a bastard. Amerigo Vespucci had the balls to just be like, it's a new world. And everyone's like, no, Amerigo, you are full of shit. And he's like, no, trust me. And that's how he got his name on the whole deal. So God bless you, Amerigo Vespucci. And yeah, la mano in Spanish. Mano is hand, but la is the female, hand job. Yes. Yeah, that's where my head's at this week is I'm just writing. Like, someone sent me a video make fun of chickens. So I said, what if it turned out chickens just needed bifocals? And then I just did like the pecking motion and it got a laugh. I'm going to play you guys something. I'm going to play you. This is Greg Fitzsimmons. I made a video about this. So Greg Fitzsimmons, hang on. Let me load this up here. So Greg Fitzsimmons, one of my favorite comics. One of the first sets I ever did was opening for him. It was Kevin Hart was my first set, and Greg Fitzsimmons was my second set because I was on the Student Association when I was in college, so I knew who was the best. Even though, you know, Kevin was unknown and Greg just had a half hour, but I was like, those two are awesome. So I got to get them to come, and I let myself open for them. Because I'm a lot like wheat. And so, you get it. And so, Greg's, I've stayed in touch with him and I always like check in and see like what he's doing. And I love his comedy. And so I sent him what I was doing and I was like, give me a premise for what to make fun of. So I'll just play this and then we'll get to the Peter Melman interview. But this is me and Greg's, you'll, yeah, I don't know if you can get it without the visual. But I'm just cutting back and forth between what he told me to say and what I said on stage.
I've been thinking hard about a premise that might be good for you that's specific. Owen Benjamin is two guys' names mushed up against each other. And I thought, well, are there other guys like that? And I thought, yeah, there's Barney, Frank.
We're thinking about names for our kids, and it's tough because a name determines your whole life. Like Benedict means he's either going to love eggs or be a traitor to Britain.
Elton John.
Todd, he's going to wear khakis and fuck one of his friend's moms.
George Michael.
Jared. No, right? There's been a few too many Jareds that are bad. You got Jared from Subway. Bad. But you also have Diamond Guy Jared, which is also annoying. She went to Jared. Yeah, well, tell Jared to go fuck himself. Fuck Jared.
Michael Angelo.
And the name Greg means he's for sure gay. I've never met a straight Greg.
Neil Patrick Harris, that's three mushed up against each other right there. And then, of course, Andy Dick. So,
yeah, if there's any Gregs in the crowd being like, yeah, it's time to tell your family the real deal, Greg. Stop hiding, Greg.
I would explore that comedically, maybe on a personal level. Take a look at that and see what you come up with. So good luck and thanks again.
I've never met a Greg that wasn't gay.
All right, that was like a little video I made. So that's called 60 Minutes, 7 Days. I'm also doing a thing on my website, owenbenjamin.com. You can send me any topic you want me to write a song about, and I will write you a song and send it to you. Just throw a tip in my jar. It could be a dollar or a billion. I don't set market prices because I now think that, you know, money's a religion, according to this goddamn book. All right, but just throw a tip in my jar. Don't make a hooker bang for free. It's weird. But you can make it as low as you want. If you're having a rough week, I don't care. I'm looking to try new things. I want to write about new stuff or just your favorite song. Like this week, I already wrote a song about their three-legged dog. That was very fun. I wrote a woman a song about being a teacher. I covered Guns N' Roses. I covered, what else did I do? Someone wanted to hear, I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round, little John Lennon, and a couple more. So people are enjoying it, which I enjoy. And it's a good way to interact with you guys because, let's face it, we need community in our lives. I think we can have the best of both worlds. I know I can sound like a buzzkill with all the market stuff and wheat and everything, but it's actually really good. It's just we sacrifice community and health. So if we can have it all, I mean, you know, agriculture can give us tons of food and we don't have to like run around jungles looking for oranges and shit. So, but we got to reach out to each other and make sure that we stay in each other's lives because I think isolation is really messing with people. Not online, not just online, like actual emails, like what I get from you guys or like songs or like actual conversations, not just reactions to the fact I'm wearing a sombrero to a party. That's not cool. I like sombreros. The irony is, of course, Jews have yarmulkes and they need more sun protection than Mexicans who have fucking sombreros. They're hiding from the sun. Well, the Jews don't have a brim. I think that's bullshit. And a Mexican throws on a yarmulke, a Jew throws on a sombrero. All of a sudden, the Huffington Post has a problem. When in fact, they're both right when dealing with sun problems. All right, without any further ado, here is my interview with famed comedy writer, Peter Melman.
Why didn't they laugh?
You suck!
That's not funny.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh, a podcast dedicated to the wonderful silences after a joke fails and the processes to make it not fail or succeed or get a laugh. I have a wonderful guest here today, and I'm just going to get right to it. Let's get to meet him. Let's get to know him. Let's talk to him. Ladies and gentlemen, Peter Melman. What's going on, my friend?
So little.
Little. Not a lot. Now you got a book?
Yeah, I got a book.
You invented the word shrinkage?
Yeah, I had a few words that somehow came out.
Oh, thanks, buddy. How did you come up with shrinkage?
You know, you just have a situation and you need a term for it. You know, so.
I feel like that helped out a lot of guys because there's been a lot of times in my life when, you know, the ween's gotten pretty small. And if you don't have the right word for it, you're just like kind of grasping at straws.
Well, that's what happened in the episode.
That is very true. So, what's the hardest you've ever bombed on stage?
I've only been doing stand-up a little bit. I've done it like in the last year. It's the first time I did it.
Well, how did you know if what would work or not before with writing and stuff?
I didn't care. You know, I just wanted to do what I thought was funny. I mean, I was starting to like worry that I was being aged out of comedy, you know, because everything I'd see, like movies, a lot of stand-up, and I wasn't finding things funny, and I was thinking that, you know, it's me.
Right.
Like, I'm just out of it, so.
When did that start happening?
I don't remember which Seth Rogen movie, but, you know, one of those.
That happens. That's happened to all of us, though. I mean, there's a lot of comedy out there that's a little bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, it's just almost scary that people find these things funny. You know, like I keep seeing commercials now for this new movie that's coming out, not to be picking on Seth Rogen, who I'm sure is a wonderful guy, but
yeah,
you know, for this movie The Night Before, I mean, you see the commercials and there's like four or five jokes in there and it's like, that's all you got?
Do you think it's commercials? Do you think it's a commercial problem? Do you think,
I think they're putting their best stuff out there.
What's your favorite movies in the last 5 years that you find very, like, super funny?
Last 5 years? Oh, man.
Or TV.
You're really putting me on the spot. Oh, man. Might have to come back to that question. Name a few. I'll tell you if I think they were funny.
I don't really watch a lot of comedies. I watch a lot of dramas.
Neither do I.
I watch a lot of docudramas about murder.
I like those too. You watch like Discovery.
Yeah, like Snapped.
Yeah. Oh, those are the best.
Yeah, Wives with Knives.
Oh, those are just the best. Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is they're hour shows, but there's about 12 minutes of content.
Right. Because
every time you come back from a commercial, they review the entire case again.
Full recap. They recap the commercials.
They stretch it out. I mean, so taut to get it for 60, to get it like to be an hour show. It's kind of funny.
If you ever get those shows on iTunes or something, it's almost like The Wizard of Oz is revealed because it's like they're good, but they're recapping constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way to hide the lack of substance. Here's a show that I've been recently watching, and I've been passionately watching it. Usually I watch comedy just to keep up with stuff, but I don't really laugh that much. But Nathan For You, have you seen that?
Never heard of it.
Nathan Fielder from Canada. It's really funny. He goes into...
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, it's super funny. He's kind of making fun of those business help shows where they go in and fix the businesses.
Oh.
They shoot it for real. It's all real, but he's kind of like Ali G playing it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, Starbucks, there's a struggling coffee shop, so he revamped it to be dumb Starbucks, and it actually got a crowd. Like, the biggest joke is that these things actually work. He's almost, like, poking fun at the viral nature of the world now. You'll dig it.
Wow. That sounds like fun. You know, I just thought of, like, the only movie where I thought there were some funny things that I've seen in the last year. Did you see Mistress America?
No.
Noah Baumbach?
Good.
Yeah, pretty good. And his wife or girlfriend, I think it's his girlfriend, Greta Gerwig. Now, she is fantastic.
Mistress America.
She just, like, is so funny.
What about all-time favorite movies?
Comedies?
Yeah.
You know, any one of four or five Woody Allen movies, but, you know, Airplane.
Yeah, yeah.
Arthur.
Classic.
You know, anything the Zucker brothers do.
You ever see the original thing that they were making fun of for Airplane? It was called like, what was that movie called? It was called Zero Hour? Zero Hour. It was an actual movie about an airplane. It was a drama, and they went beat for beat, like making it all funny. It's really interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got to interview those guys for a web series, and they were talking about that. And then I watched it, and it blew my mind. It was like they were making a satire out of something.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah.
That. Yeah, I've met them too. God, those guys are so funny.
Yeah, they're talented. Yeah, and Arthur's classic. What did you think of Arthur 2, though? Do you like.
An absolute train wreck and a disgrace that it got made. I mean, don't you ever think, like, you know, we all know people who are like in the movie business and they're hustling to get their movie made, and, you know, it takes forever. And this gets made. I mean, why take a perfect movie?
I know.
And, you know, just to think that, oh, you know what? We'll make a big change here instead of, you know, having Hobson, you know, we'll replace him with a woman this time. You know, like.
That's like Princess Bride 2. Like, there's nowhere to go with that story. It's a complete story.
You know, I mean, it's sad that they're even allowed to remake that. I mean, you know, no Woody Allen movies get remade by anybody else because I think he would have to give permission. But, you know, Steve Gordon, the guy who wrote Arthur, you know, died at like 44. So he didn't have any control over that.
And people just like brands.
You know, the thing about Arthur is that it was really witty. It's like one of the few movies where the, you know, the jokes one after another are not just like laugh out loud. They're like really witty and perfectly written.
Yeah.
You know? There's nothing like that.
Heartbreak Kid is a classic.
Yeah.
It's a good performance. Yeah, but I don't really watch a lot of comedies now. Like I think because I live so many of them, like what they're making fun of is like drinking or like dating or just things that, like, I have a friend, the guy who wrote The Martian, Andy Weir. Mm-hmm. So I was interviewing him for this other podcast I do about physics, and I was asking him if he likes Silicon Valley, and he's like, no, it's too real. It like drives me crazy because it's too like his world. Like actual nerds don't want to watch Silicon Valley because that's like a war vet watching a like war movie. Like they're just like, I don't want to relive that.
Yeah.
And I think I'm like that with a lot of the dating or the drinking comedies. I'm like, why would I just want to watch a recap of the 2000s?
That's true. And, you know, I always think there's like a certain amount of arrogance in believing that like your life story is a movie.
Existence
is a movie. You know, like, you know, this whole thing about write what you know drives me crazy. You know, you're writing something fictional. How about making it up?
Yeah, you know, totally.
You know, just, I have a real pet peeve about write what you know.
Well, yeah. And also, I think people are starting to think they're more interesting than they are because of social media.
Everybody's like their own publicist now.
I actually wrote a rant about that on Facebook today. I was telling everyone that they don't matter. But since it was under the guise of satire, I feel like you can write annoyances, but you can't write that you're an. I'm really annoyed by everyone's an expert.
Right.
Where it's like, they're like, this is what we should do in this country. It's like, how do you know? Like, I could read 20 books on certain topics and be like, I have no idea. And these people all think that they're experts.
Yeah. And, you know, and really, they're just in it for the attention. I think that could be the next big growth area, by the way. Like, you know, like rehab for attention addiction.
Right.
You know, people like, you know, you just check into this rehab facility and you start talking about yourself and the counselor goes, oh, I'm sorry, were you saying something?
That's interesting.
You know, I mean, just attention is like all people want. It's become almost currency.
Interesting.
You know, they want attention. I always tell people that, you know, I always say that I have attention surplus disorder. I just want everybody to leave me alone.
But that's probably what makes people want to know about you because you're the only one being like, don't read my blog.
Yeah. Oh, God, a blog. I mean, you know, like, I mean, I'm confident enough to think that I have more to say about things than most people, but I certainly don't have the arrogance level to think that I could be writing every day about something.
Right.
And and people should read it. I mean, you know.
Well, and if you're going at it from a point of view of being funny, I think you always have more of a right to write than if you're like, this is what needs to change in America. Like those people, I'm like, how do you know?
Yeah.
I think that Steve Jobs almost played a trick on us all, that he literally was starting all the products with a lowercase I.
Mm.
And the imagery is a bitten apple. It's like right out of the fall of man.
Right. I didn't think that's true. I didn't think about that. That is really true.
It's a bitten apple. Like yeah. The image, you don't have to be a religious person to be like, are you really making it that obvious that it's just the descent of man? But it's fun. I mean, it's a good time. You know, podcasts are fun. I can listen to people I want to listen to, but yeah, everyone's just refreshing what someone's saying. Then it's this battle. No one can exchange actual ideas. It's really interesting online when someone attacks and then you're just like, oh, interesting. I'll think of it that way, you know? Because I did a post the other day. I was like, because my wife's pregnant. And
congratulations.
Thank you. And I said, the doctor said it's a boy, but, you know, it's a little early to be assigning gender roles. My doctor's very 2014. And then someone posted that it was in some movie and like, but it was a tacky. But I was like, oh, I got to see that. That's really funny. And then they're like, oh, yeah, check it out. Like, it's almost like people have PTSD where they want to start a fight. But then when you treat them with genuine kindness or like, oh, yeah, yeah that I'm glad you showed me that. That whoever made this movie has a similar sense of humor than me. And it's like, then they were just like, oh, that's, oh, cool, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, it really, you know, like, I don't know where it's going to settle down. It really has gone crazy. Like, you know, like, it seems like the whole world's in flux. Like, you don't know if there are going to be newspapers in a year from now. You don't know if anybody's right. ever going to watch TV again.
Which is odd, because our whole economy's based on trust. Like, right. That's what money is. You have to trust.
Well, they're really pushing the limits of trust now.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about it, like, you take a show like Mad Men, which I think is, like, the greatest show ever made.
It's awesome.
You know, it was, they have commercials, and they're, with all the publicity that Mad Men got, and, you know, the tie-ins to Banana Republic every year, and every one of their actors on the cover of every magazine, you know, if they got 2 million viewers in a week, that was huge for them.
Yeah.
But then they'll tell you, well, our viewers are really high-end. But if the viewers are so high-end, they have DVRs, and they're not watching any of the commercials. So then they say, you don't really have to watch the commercials. It's just impressions now. You could go, if they're flicking past the commercials and they see what it's for, that's enough. They don't even have to see the commercials.
It's madness.
That's a completely made up economy.
Yeah.
Not that every economy is not made up, but this is getting a little bit creative. You know, I mean, the creative side of it. I mean, like, everybody's kind of buying into it.
There's this book that I'm reading, right? I'm listening to. Some of my friends insist that I say listening to. It's called Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind by Yuval Noah Harari. It's mind-blowingly insightful, kind of depressing on this level, mm-hmm. because it's like basically all the he starts with, you know, sapiens while there was still Homo erectus and all that stuff, because it wasn't like this linear line that everyone thinks. There was a bunch of Homo sapien, Homo erectus, Homo whatever, all at the same time, and just our ascent to where we are now. But it's not really an ascent. It's crazy, like how the Dutch were the first ones to like have a system where the king couldn't impose on banks, and how that allowed them to take over France. And then it's nuts. Just you just got, there's no way I can recap it. There's just no way.
Yeah. That sounds like one of those books where it's just so hard to grasp it all. Like, you're reading sentences three times.
I mean, there's just concepts that I just can't wrap my head around. He's probably one of the most, and I read history all the time, and my parents are professors, read it my whole life. This dude is just on a different level. It's crazy.
Mm.
What was one of the things today? Oh, about how everyone conceives of the individual against the state and the market, where in fact, the state and the market has allowed the individual to exist because that provides for all the things that family and community used to provide for. So
right.
Oh, I mean, these types of concepts, it's like when you look at it from pure historical economics, it's like government programs and state programs and all that stuff is actually what allows someone to be an individual and not have the parents dictate everything and the community elder. And there's good things to that, bad, you know, there's no like good or bad. There just is.
Well, it always, you know, I mean, you like, you look at the internet and for every really good thing about it, there's the equal and opposite horrible thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's with everything, you know, Facebook, all those things, you know, there's just the equal and opposite awful.
Was it always like that? I mean, I just heard this NPR, what was it? Radiolab, about how they dug up this old garbage site from Rome, and it was basically all porn and gossip.
Yeah.
That life never, you know, it was all just like gladiator, like written gladiator porn and like gossip about what, you know, emperor was banging some. And so it's like basically it was Us Weekly for Caligula. I mean, do things ever change?
I guess not. Well, certainly people don't really change. You know, they're all, you know, spiteful and competitive. And, you know, it's really hard to rise above. I mean, you know, like you look at just the motivations behind, you know, certain radical thinkers, you know, or, you know, right wing or super left wing, but, you know, especially right wing thinkers. I mean, like, who is this guy who is standing in front of an abortion clinic? Like, you right. know, you know, whatever you feel about abortion, you know, I don't care, but who is this guy that, what gets him there?
Yeah.
That's what I always think about. Like
narcissism.
I always think it's envy.
Vagina envy?
No, I think it's like his view is, you know, he doesn't really care about saving kids' lives. That's like the last thing. He's just so puritanical and that, you know, he's worried that someone else out there is having too much fun.
Right. I think a lot of it, it's dudes who don't get any ass either.
Oh, that's totally
it. Well, it's like
that's the reduced, hardened version of what I was trying to say.
Yeah, it's basically the guy that's like, how dare these women have sex and then not be punished for it?
Right.
Because they're not getting the sex. Because the women aren't wanting them, so therefore they're angry at everyone.
And then you think of these senators and congressmen. I'm always thinking, like, how many of them have 15-year-old daughters who are going to make a mistake in the next 3 years?
Right.
And they're going to say, well, you have to live with that mistake for the next 75 years? Is that, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of people that are truly against abortion are just that way personally. They're like, yeah, it's kind of like not smoking. It's like, I choose not to. Like, it's a good question of, like, who stands in front of the thing. It's
right.
Like,
I'm just, you know, like, how does that person get some kind of self-satisfaction out of doing this? You know, like,
because you have to be really radicalized religiously to be against very early early abortion. You know, when it's just cells, when the egg has been fertilized, that Plan B time or an early abortion, you have to almost be like a Quaker to be again. Like that's pretty
extreme.
Yeah,
or the morning after pill. I mean,
right. I mean, a condom. I know some of these people and it's like to them, a condom or masturbating is on the same level as, but it's all a sin. Mm. You know, if you're not having sex just to conceive, you're committing a sin. And that's the level. I mean, what, you know, there's a time when abortion starts getting a little creepy when I'm personally against it, when it's like, you know, there's like hands and shit. I'm like, okay, not against it. I'm not judging anybody. I'm not picketing, but I'm like, I don't know. It just seems a little like it's something.
But
you're
willing to admit that you could be wrong.
That's the whole thing. Yeah, that's the whole thing. It's like, who am I to tell somebody what their life is? You
and
know?
Also, you know, in addition to the theory of it's all based on not getting any, there's also, I don't know when the expression holier than thou started, but, you know, people have to feel better than somebody else. It's either they have to feel holier or they have to feel this, they feel this incredible need to shit on somebody.
Do you think it's from an emptiness they feel from lack of community? That's right.
Unfillable. Unfillable emptiness.
What causes it?
I don't know.
My theory is that we were such psycho monkeys for so long that now that everything's taken care of, it's almost like that, that king disease that happens when it's like, when you no longer have problems, you like face yourself completely and we're all pretty flawed.
Yeah. And also, you know, with all this media, people are seeing what they're missing.
Right. And it's all, it's a highlight reel too.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the potential for envy is so much bigger now because, like, you know, these kids, it's so funny when you hear, you know, when you ask like some kid what he wants to be when he grows up and they say, I want to be famous.
Right. It's like,
you know,
for
like
what?
That's an occupation.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
Yeah.
Like every time I'm in a conversation like this, I start feeling like I'm like 90 years old, but whatever.
Well, no, but that's the I'm trying to work on a bit called the curmudgeon effect. I don't know how to do it yet, but because it's so exponential that like there's like 15-year-olds that are curmudgeons now. It's like Everybody's feels old.
That's an interesting point.
It's because it's shifting. All right, I'm 35 and I'm like, I don't even feel in touch with social media at all. Like, I don't understand half of the shit. Like, I don't know how to tag people properly. I don't know what Snapchat is. Snapchat is something that disappears after 10 seconds. It's like a big thing. It's just, I don't know. I think that everyone is kind of left in the dust in this, anytime something's exponential, because people are like, oh, every generation says that. It's like, there was no inventions for like 2,000 years. Like, Plato was bummed out about the written language, which is kind of hilarious. He thought that that would take away from mental acuity. But until, you know, the printing press, that was a long run where shit didn't change that much.
It's funny, you know, like you think about Snapchat and, you know, you send something and it evaporates in, you know, 10 seconds or whatever it is. And you know, Twitter is 140 characters. I mean, it's so and Vine, 6-second videos. I mean, can you believe it?
But it's almost eating itself, though. That's why podcasts have such a resurgence. Like, when I go on the road, I get more people to the shows from this than I do TV credits, because I think people want that pace to chill out.
Mm.
I think that a friend of mine who has been an actor for a long time, he claims that once the corporation started owning all the TV networks that there was no more acting. It was just cut, 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 cut. And he said that makes people's brains crazy. He has a theory that it creates late onset autism. But, you know, we might need some research on that one, but it's possible. But
that could be a really interesting illness.
Yeah, it's almost like if you eat too much sugar, you get diabetes. It's like if you have too much stimuli, you start showing signs of autism where you don't make eye contact. You process data without context. That's like all these trigger words people have now.
Right.
I mean, that's textbook autism. It's like, I am reacting only to a word and not what came before and after the word. I mean, you know.
That's I have early onset rigor mortis.
Nice.
Is that
an erection?
No, it's like, I wake up and I go, like, oh my God. You know, like I'm like holding my back.
I think I might have a little bit of autism. I'm really good at the piano. How did you get into writing without doing stand-up first?
I was a journalist. You know, I wrote for the Washington Post, and then, you know, I worked at ABC Sports. And then I moved out here. I was just writing for magazines freelance. And I had met Larry David. Before I moved out here, I had met Larry David one or two times in New York, and then I bumped into him here, and, you know, we had gotten along, and he knew I was a writer, so he just said, why don't you give me a writing sample? He didn't know that I had never written the script.
Right.
But, and he said, I'll pass it on to Jerry. Maybe you could write a script for, you know, this was the show. Nobody even heard of it yet.
Wow.
They had done 3 episodes.
That's incredible.
And I handed in a piece that I'd written, kind of a humor piece, but it was actually bittersweet, which is a little weird because, you know, Seinfeld, the last thing it was bittersweet. But
They say no hugging, no learning.
Yeah, no hugging, no learning. But I wrote this piece for the New York Times, and it was weird. Of all the people that got, you know, the same offer from Larry, you know, he called me up and said, Jerry, love your stuff. Why don't you come in? Maybe, you know, let's come up with a script. And so I came up with a couple ideas, met with them, and, you know, I went off to write the script, and it worked out.
That's great, man.
Next thing you know, I was loaded.
Yeah. Seinfeld.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a fun time.
See, I started writing for Snapchat recently, and I'm just kidding.
And it just evanesced. It
goes away every 10 seconds. What do you think about stand-up now that you're doing it? You said you've been doing it for the last year. What's your impression of it?
My impression is completely unrealistic because I haven't even found it that hard, and I kind of like actually enjoy it, like weird things about it, like taking unbelievably long pauses, you know, just playing around with things. And, you know, look, there's no pressure on me. I don't make a living at it. You know, it's not right. something I'm planning to make a living out of. So, you know, I don't really have anything to prove. So, you know, I feel very calm and comfortable up there. And, you know, it is kind of thrilling to come up with a bit that is really good, you know, that always works. That,
yeah,
that I found like incredibly gratifying.
Yeah. That's the addiction.
Yeah. That part is super gratifying.
I had a crazy week with stand up. I was trying to do something called 60 minutes in 7 days, where I was writing 60 minutes in a week. And I would have people send me premise videos, and I would use the videos to, and I would try and do a joke on whatever, any crazy premise they told me. Cause I was on stage for like 9 hours this week, so I actually had time to do it. And cause I came up with this because I got married and my wife got pregnant pretty fast. We've been together a while, but, there's always a lag in stand-up where your jokes are like 6 months before your current, it's like time warp. Where you're dating someone for 6 months and you just start saying you're not single because your jokes haven't caught up.
Right.
So I almost felt like doing a controlled burn just because everything didn't change that much, but it was like enough where I was like, I just want to start again. So I just burned it. And then it was fun. I haven't had that much fun doing stand-up in a long time. Just like that many new bits. Because that's the thrill. And then some would just tank and some would work right off the bat. And then others you have to tweak.
Yeah. I do it all in the shower.
Really?
That's where it all comes. I don't know why. I've always been like, you know, I think really clearly in the shower.
What do you think it is? Temperature?
I think it's partially temperature. And I think it's partially like a zone where you can't, you know, like it's your own little cone of silence because,
right.
you know, because you're not going to get phone calls there. Nobody's going to interrupt you. You don't have your phone with you. You're not hearing the phone outside. It's like, oh my God, it's such bliss.
Yeah. That was me with jogging. And then I got this app that would say how far I was going. And now the fucking phone is back.
You know, that app is on, you know, like that. You know, the how many steps you take in a day. You know, you could become obsessed with that. You know, like
that's what happened to me. That was my bliss.
I've gotten to the point now where like I'm taking my phone to go from my bed to the bathroom just because I want the steps to count.
They got us. That's how they got us again.
You know, I want those steps to count. You know,
yeah, that's how I am.
It's unbelievable. And of course I'm taking like 3 steps a day, you know, but still.
Yeah, because I live at the water. I would always do these long beach jogs and just think. And then I got this app where it says how far I'm going, how many calories I'm burning. And now I'm like, yeah, I like beating numbers. It's just part of my nature. And that bliss is gone.
I live at the beach too. And I think like with the app, you know, like maybe I'm working harder at these steps. You know, like maybe if I just walked on the street, I would get more steps because it's a less work, you know, because, you know, when you're walking on the beach,
because you want that number to be, you want to be efficient.
Yeah. I want to get up to like, you know, I want to get up to, well, 10,000 is ridiculous. You know, but they say that thing, you should walk 10,000 steps a day, which isn't even really that hard, but I hardly ever get there.
Yeah.
I mean, like where,
what's it, but what,
you know, in New York, you could do that very easily, 10,000 steps a day, but here it's like,
and like, what's the goal? Like, what do you get at the end?
I know nothing.
Caesar just got a salad.
And, you know, the thing is, you know, it shows you, like, there's a graph of your steps for that day.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, you have one good day, and then the rest of the week, it's like a bad week in the stock market. It's really depressing.
Yeah, the shower is the only place that they really don't have us.
Yeah. You know, flights, I guess you can be on Wi-Fi now, but.
I don't go on Wi-Fi on flights. That's another. Yeah,
I don't do it either. Yeah. And, you know, like I was traveling a lot, you know, for a while. And, you know, I don't really enjoy it. But I started thinking, you know, like maybe I should get that shower feeling on the flight. Like just that little piece of knowing that nothing bad is going to happen while you're on this flight. You're not going to get some shitty phone call. You're not going to get some text. You know, you're not going to, you know, like nothing bad's going to happen. You could just kind of like be peaceful here for a few hours.
I know. If I know I'm going to die, I want to set up an email alert that says I'm dead. I don't care anymore when anyone emails me. Just so they know that I'm happier dead than they're alive.
Yeah.
It's
well, that's a whole other area of conversation that, I mean, especially if you're a sports fan, that I just don't get. You know, people are always talking about their legacy and like how they'd like to be remembered. Who cares? I'd like to be remembered as the person who didn't die ever. That's the only thing that's good. But you know, like this whole thing with leaving a legacy, like who cares?
Yeah.
I understand it with your children. You know, like you'd like to leave some good children for the world, or, you know, hopefully they contribute to the world or something like that. But aside from that, you know, like what good is it gonna do you that, you know,
that there's a street in some dumb town named after you?
I mean, people have told me, you know, you're going to have an obit in the New York Times. Like, what good is that going to do me?
Right.
You know, put it out now.
You know, that's what happened with Nobel. They thought he was a war. He made weapons? Yeah, he made weapons. And he invented dynamite, you know, a big war guy. And they thought he died, so they put an obit in the newspaper, and it said like warmonger dead or something, and that's what made him spend the rest of his life dedicated to peace.
Really?
Because he saw his own obituary.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
I love the idea. You know, I mean, they write the obits in advance. You know, it would be great to, you know, be at a certain age where if you had a contact at the New York Times, it'd be like, can I see my obit?
Yeah, let's do some punch up.
You know, like, yeah. No, this is all wrong. Could you imagine if you got the chance to, like, edit your, which is basically what a memoir is.
That is.
You know, your autobiography, writing an autobiography is basically a chance to edit your own, you know, in your own story. Of course, that's another thing that drives me crazy. Like, everybody gets to write a memoir now. You know, like, really? I mean, God almighty. You know, everybody, it's unbelievable. Like, it always seemed to me that publishing a book would be, like, such an incredible thing. And then you look at the people who have books out. You know, like, one comedian writes a book, and then, like, there's 10,000 of them, you know?
Right. It's almost like that old, was it a riddle? There's, like, a story about a leprechaun, and and he gets caught. Someone catches the leprechaun, and so they have to say where the treasure is. And he's like, "It's under the tree, and I'll put a white sash on the tree so you know." And so he just put a white sash on every tree. That's kind of what's happening with perspective.
Right.
Where it's like, okay, you can have a voice. You're an individual. You can be whatever you want. And everyone's like, oh, thank you. It's like, and so can everyone. And so then everyone is just an expert on, like, I do this other podcast with a nuclear physicist from, we record it like Caltech. We interview all these.
Who doesn't do a podcast with nuclear physicists?
Right, yeah, but everybody. I'm the idiot part. I'm the one that's like, hey, what does that mean? And so I get to watch people be know-it-alls with like Nobel Prize winners. That's why I know that it's crazy. That's why I wrote this rant today. I'm like, people are losing their minds. But it's like, so I heard someone say this to my friend who was like, well, they say that a nuclear reactor can explode 20 times Hiroshima. And he's like, no, that doesn't happen. It's not the same. It's not weaponized. And he's like, no, they. And he goes, I'm they.
Yeah.
Like, you are not, like, he's not arrogant. I'm a lot more arrogant than him. And I don't have much less accomplishments. But I'm the type that's like, you are nothing to him. Like, I will say that shit. But, like, he's just like, just do an experiment. I'm like, logging into Facebook is not an experiment. Like, that doesn't make you an expert. Because you read a BuzzFeed article?
No, it makes you, you know less than you did before.
Yeah, you know, a newborn baby knows more because it's not claiming to know
because it,
bullshit.
Yeah, it's disinformation. You know, it's like you mentioned Us Magazine before. If you read a profile of a famous person in a magazine, when you're done with that article, you actually know less than you did before the, you
right,
know, the article.
It was wrong.
Because it's all, you know, it's all made up. It's all, you know, it's all not true. It's disinformation most of the time.
Yeah, I know. And the problem is my dad teaches rhetoric. So unfortunately, I have enough knowledge of that where I just literally see it all over the place. And it's such complete horseshit.
Mm.
I wish I didn't know how easy people are to be like people just they react to emotions. They're very emotional.
But that's such a great thing to teach.
Yeah. No,
rhetoric.
It's pretty amazing.
I mean, you know, like it's just specific enough and philosophical enough that it covers all different areas. It covers so much ground that it's just a great thing to teach.
Yeah. Like speech persuasion.
Yeah. I mean, like you don't have to kind of make it up. Like you don't have to.
No, it's a science.
What am I going to give the lesson plan on now? You know, I'm, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's fascinating. Like you could do the rhetoric of anything that you find interesting.
Yeah, and there's a nice dollar in that rhetoric business. So.
Yeah, no, there's. I used to collect cans as a kid, but my parents had PhDs.
Yeah.
But they made less money than Walmart employees. It's a good combo. That's why I got into the podcast business. No, it's the same with like I did an hour special with Comedy Central, and it's like I grew up, you know, being like that's the mecca, that's the, and then you're just like. Well, that, you know, they do 16 a year now. But the other way to look at it is if they didn't, I wouldn't have gotten it. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe I was 15th.
Well, you did it. What, you know?
Fuck it.
Yeah.
How do you write? Like, what's the best way for you to write? Is it, so you start shower, broad strokes, and then you hit computer?
You know, on a lot of things, I'm into it before I realize I'm really into it. You know, like I'm starting to like just write. I wrote this novel and I was 30 pages into it before I realized I was writing a novel.
Wow. Yeah. Tell me the process. How do you do that?
You know, it's very strange. One night I had dinner with an old friend who lives out here whose parents were in town and they were telling me about this town in Long Island where Orthodox Jews have kind of moved in heavily and they throw their economic weight around. You know, like if you're a store owner, no matter what religion you are in that town and you're open on a Friday night or a Saturday, they will boycott you. And, you know, that just to me was so outrageous, you know, like
yeah.
Just foisting your beliefs on other people. It was so outrageous. And I don't know, it just started getting my head going. And then, you know, I have these other kind of preoccupations that fit in well with it. You know, like I'm always fascinated by how delicate our existence is. You know, like you spend all these years being, you know, hopefully being a good person and having a reputation as a solid guy. But, you know, it could, one little action, you know, you're in a store behind some woman and you reach out and touch her breast and it's all over.
Right.
You're on some kind of weird impulse. You reach out, touch her breast. Your whole reputation, everything you've built can be shot in that, like that 1 second.
Yeah. Same with violence. Like you get in a fight, someone dies, it's all gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just that stuff I'm just obsessed with. And you know, you're only 35, but you know, like I also notice that a lot of people when they hit like 50, they kind of lose their shit, you know, men.
Yeah, no, I've noticed
that. They really lose it. They, you know, like, really lose it.
You give me some examples.
You know, I had, like, one guy in the novel, and this is one of the very few things that's based, one of the very few people that's based on somebody real. And it's not even based on that person. It's just based on his hobby. But, like, all of a sudden, he's doing Civil War reenactments. you know, like this whole life, you know, he's like the Civil War and he was a history major, but all of a sudden he's like dressing up in Confederate clothes and, you know, wearing the gray and, you know, holding a rifle and going down to Manassas for the weekend.
What do you think causes that?
I don't know. Like, I think, you know, we were talking about, you know, filling holes and these people, you know, like, you know, the guy standing in front of the abortion clinic. I just think that, you know, I don't know, maybe just, you know, we live a lot longer now, and maybe 50 is now the point where people just kind of question what the hell it's all about. And
yeah,
they just kind of lose it. Or, you know, another thing that was fascinating to me, I met somebody at a pool at the Four Seasons Hotel, and I won't go into details, but extraordinarily wealthy, and he's talking about this and that, you know, in his wedding, and, you know, he's like, you know, self-made and billionaire. And one of his friends introduces, you know, his wife is sitting next to him, and one of his friends says, do you know that blah, blah, the rich guy here and his wife have been together since they were basically in sixth grade? And the rich guy immediately says, yeah, but we broke up in college for a while. You know, like, in other words, he had to, it's not enough that he's, you know, been married all this time and he's been fantastically successful, but he has to make this little point of, there was a time we broke up and boy, I was just, you know, like,
yeah, he's like
up to my head in, you know, like,
yeah,
every,
he's like,
day.
I also pounded ass.
Yeah. Like 50 different women in the, you know,
right.
And you know, he didn't. But, like, you know, that's kind of another thing. Like,
I don't know if it's more pathetic if he did or didn't. It's just like the fact that he had to do that.
It's the fact that he had to say that and give you that impression that, you know, like, I think that's another symptom of society now, that it's just never enough.
Has it always been like that?
I don't think so.
Do you think we're so prosperous that that's why? That we're doing so well that now it's like, it's almost like our nature has 8 exclamation points at the end of it.
I don't know. Look at Brian Williams.
Right.
You know, like, why did he have to lie about these stories?
And he was getting shot at. Like, that wasn't enough of a story.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and, you know, Hillary Clinton basically did the same thing. She said she got shot out on the tarmac in, you know, in Baghdad or something like that, and she had to back off that. And even lamer, I don't know if you remember during the campaign in 2012 that Paul Ryan, he was a marathoner, and, you know, he had to stop running marathons, but his best time was like 2:47. He ran one marathon in his life, it turned out, and his time was like 4:40. You know, like, why do you have to lie about something like that?
I think a lot of times people that ascend to power, like, have been lying the whole time. So it's like it's like the scorpion and the frog story. It's like,
yeah,
their nature is to get that those first couple things. Because when you have power, when you're not good at anything, it's just like the ascension of power is definitely lying. It's like there's no way. It's one thing if you're just awesome at something and you're powerful, like LeBron James. It's like he can't help but have power because of his skill level. But like, if you just are a power person, like, what is your skill? Just lying.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think that's one of the things I love about Obama, is that he's incredibly unneedy.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't, you know, just because you give him money for his campaign, you're not sleeping in the Lincoln bedroom. You know, he's not going to glad hand you. He's like the most, he's so self-contained as a human being that it's kind of like refreshing.
I started liking him a lot when I heard him on Mark Maron, because it was the first president I've ever seen. I don't like any presidents. I just don't like listening to any of them. It's the first time I've ever heard a president kind of drop the shield a little bit and just be like, yeah, we're basically middle management, you know? Like, I've never heard that.
Well, you know, he's in this kind of, like, I don't give a fuck Obama stage.
See, this is the Obama
I like. Which I just love.
Yeah,
I didn't like the old one.
I didn't like the, I mean, the rhetoric was as empty as humanly possible. The whole, yes, we can change. It was like, I mean, better than the Bushes, but, like, still, yeah. you know, I'm like, this is just a farce. This is a fucking, you know, but now I think that, I think if he was like how he is now the whole time, it's a lot harder to criticize a guy that's just like, yeah, I did that.
Yeah. Well, it takes a long time to figure out that job. It's amazing how very smart people just can't figure out that job.
Yeah, it's like that old Bill Hicks joke about, you know, when you get elected, do they take you into a little room and show you a different perspective of Kennedy getting shot? And they're like, follow orders.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, who would want that job?
You got to be crazy. You got to be really
That's why I don't
crazy.
Like any of them. I just don't like any of the I just don't. I mean, Clinton's inspiring, very inspiring man. It's like, but what makes you want that?
Yeah. I like Clinton too, but you know, I don't know. I can't really think of much he did as president. You know,
no, he just made you feel good.
Yeah.
But see, that's what a president should do. They have no actual power. I mean, they kind of do, but they're more of just like keeping the. It's like being a president of a student council. It's like you don't.
I think it's like the point of the job is to like, you know, like just leave office and not have the world be over.
Right. You know, like, right.
Just, okay, I did my little stewardship of things for a while, and that's it for now.
Well, I do a bit about how the president is like a manager at Applebee's. I do a bit making fun of Trump, which is why I'm like, I find Trump funny. You can think he's a good businessman. I'm like, but, you know, that's why Obama was a good president, because he's just basically like, you don't like the soup? It's cold. Get your new soup. You know, and Trump would be like, it's gazpacho, bitch. Get out. You know? And then Fallon would be a good president, because he'd just be like, oh, no way, soup, we all got soup. You know, how it's all about that bullshit vibe is actually good. That you want people to just smooth it out. Like, yes, we can. Like, that doesn't mean anything.
No.
Who's we and what is?
Well, like, you know, the campaign is, you know, even worse. I mean, you know, that's just complete, you know, that's really selling Campbell's soup.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we can.
Yeah. I don't know what it means, but I love it.
It's a lot better than war, I guess, but
yeah.
I mean, who knows?
It's a lot better than running on the plank of, boy, we are really fucked.
Right. Who do you think was our best president of all time?
Oh, I don't know. You know, probably the first six
the guys with slaves.
The first six and Lincoln and
gotta go FDR, right?
And FDR.
I think FDR is the most impressive.
Yeah, for
Nazis and Depression.
Yeah.
Great Depression, Nazis.
We both. Got it all.
From a wheelchair.
Yeah. And all the stuff that's still, like, you know, so important today.
Yeah.
You know, Social Security, people worrying, where's my Social Security? You know, maybe someday, you know, Obamacare will be looked back on like that. I hope.
Why do you think it had so many problems? Was it the...
It wasn't it. It was him. They just hate him.
Right.
Everybody just hate... You know, these people just hate him. You know, they hated Clinton too, you know, like, because, you know, usually Republicans are the side that, you know, plays political hardball. And somehow they got beat at their own game by... I mean, God. You know, I keep on joking that, like, if McCain knew that one day he would run for president and lose to a black guy, he probably would have stayed in the Hanoi Hilton all these years.
Yeah, but it's their small donors screwed them, because then they have to have these absurd social stances.
Yeah.
Because, like, it was a fair fight when it was small government, lower taxes, bigger government, higher taxes, more social security. Now it's just like Republicans are insane. They're just insane people.
They're right. Wing has just gone nuts.
Yeah, because like the original tenets of it, it was a battle. It's like small business versus like the teacher. My parents were teachers, you know, so they were Democrats and my friend. Now it's literally like you're against abortion, you're against gay marriage, you're against legalizing marijuana, you're against Social Security. It's like no one can be on that platform now.
And all they want is less and less government, and they're running and these guys are saying no government, you know. And they're running for president. I don't get that. You know, like,
yeah,
they want to be the head of the government, and they just want to, all they do is slam government. And then, of course, you know, they want less government and no taxes. Well, you know, like, You just drove to work today. How do you think that happened?
Right.
You know, how do you think those roads got there? You know, it's socialism. That's how it got there.
Well, yeah, and it's lowering taxes for corporations. Because it's like, I don't think like taxing the mega rich makes much of a difference. It's the corporate entities.
Yeah.
The giant. It's not like, I understand my friends that are like, being the top tax bracket, you shouldn't be penalized for making more money. Like, I understand that argument, but it's like, if you're a part of a corporation that makes $250 billion a year and you have no taxes, like, someone has to explain that to me.
And another thing that's amazing is, you know, like, people who live in the cities who have virtually no contact with nature, they're the ones who are environmental.
Right.
You know, and the people who are, you know, living in the boonies and are fishing all weekend, no, we should drill, you know, like, you know, they don't care, you know, and, you know, and the poor white trash who, like, you know, are what welfare is, you know.
Right.
Welfare is all, like, poor white people.
Yeah.
You know, they're the ones who are arguing against it. You know, I don't get it. You know, yeah, like, everybody's on the wrong side of everything.
Well, it's stance, it's a position versus, oh, my dad taught a class in this shit. What is it? It's something about your position versus your interest, where someone, a lot of times that has to do with just raw, stupid emotions. Like, if someone's position will go against their own personal interest just because they're, like, rebutting something that offends them.
Yeah.
And that's when you see people just spiraling. I saw that with the Confederate flag. That was a textbook example where when a lot of Southern people were called dumb, then they'd be like, these colors don't run, man. But if you're like, you're not dumb, it's just, picture yourself as a black guy going into a courthouse with that flag. And they're like, good point, man. Fuck that flag.
Really?
People react to being called names, where it's like, whenever someone's like, you're an idiot because you're from Georgia and you like the Confederate flag, they're like, fuck you, man. But when you're like, no, like, Sherman's March to the Sea was a genocide. I respect that. You got to give them a little and then just be like, but it's just, think about what that flag represents. And then they're like, yeah, man, that's true.
You know, I can't even, it's so funny. Like, I could never watch any of these pundits on TV. I've actually gotten to the point where I can't even bear listening to people I agree with.
Yeah. No, I don't watch any of this. I don't watch any.
You know,
you're like, good point, asshole.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, good. Just, you know, where's Marv Albert and where's the game?
Yeah. I was raised, my dad would just scream at the television. Yeah. I like, it was just all McNeil Lair News Hour and these goddamn Republicans, like, that was my whole childhood. SUNY Oscwego, upstate New York.
Oh, wow. Yeah, sure.
Seinfeld actually went there for a year and then bailed. Yeah, yeah, but just smartly.
And then he went to Queens College.
Yeah, he did, because it was too cold, and he was right. It's too cold up there.
I'm sure that reason that he gave for leaving was, talked about with his management team or something like that. I mean, I don't think he left because it was too cold. I don't know why
he
left.
He was doing stand-up all 19?
I don't really know.
I could see that.
Since I started doing it, though, I've emailed him about it a few times, and, you know, he's given me some good tips.
Can you pass him on?
Some of his two main tips are, one I love is, like, never laugh at your own jokes. You know, like, the more serious you take your stuff, the funnier the audience will find it.
Right.
I really like that. And what was his other thing? I don't remember what the other big one was. I'd have to get back to you on that. I guess it didn't make much of an impression, but that one did. The first one did. I mean, not that I was laughing anyway. I mean, I'm, you know, like, I'm like completely, you know, deadpan up there.
Yeah.
I mean, I would, you know, Stephen Wright is somebody who, like, you know, I totally admire, you know, like
Galifianakis. Like, you ever see Galifianakis?
I never saw him do stand up.
Ah, oh, so good. Deadpan.
Yeah, I know he's dead. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, his one liners, I think he's up there, one of the top all time. He'd be like, here's my impression of a condescending illiterate. I've already told you, I don't read.
That's yeah. really funny.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just so boiled down.
I was so glad he did that movie, Birdman.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he was doing one too many of those comic parts where it was like starting to get repetitious. And, you know, you could just see he's like super talented.
He's got that new FX show.
And he's really smart.
Yeah, FX show, it looks really good. It doesn't look just, it looks like a really well-rounded show. You watch Fargo?
No.
Solid.
I love the movie.
The show is insane.
I heard it's really great. They have some good actors on it too now.
I got to read your book.
Yeah, it's a fun read. It's the whole story is told by this podiatrist on Long Island. And he's telling the story to his college roommate who's in a coma. Because that's another thing about middle-aged men in America. They kind of reach a point where they realize they've never really had the floor in their life.
Right.
They've never really had the opportunity to actually say what's on their mind. So it was great that he's talking to a friend who's in a coma because he can't be interrupted. I mean, he's kind of technically telling the story, which is kind of what he's like. You know, he's kind of a halfway person. Another thing about the story, and not to get mushy here, but, you know, since you're a newlywed to some degree, you know, this guy's been married 25 years and he's like absolutely still crazy about his wife. And he's always trying to still impress his wife after all this time.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's like a whole new genre, the marriage that works. I mean, who writes about that?
I know. I feel like that's my voice now. And I almost like I had to like rethink that. I'm like, is that possible during in comedy to be like excited about your wife? Everyone's always complaining about their wives.
Yeah. You know, I was about 50 pages in. At one point, I had him make one little joke about his wife, and I liked her so much that I pulled it out.
Yeah.
You know, that's when I realized
that's great.
I can't say anything bad about her because she's so great and she's so cool. Everybody was saying, God, you wrote your dream wife.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, I really liked that part of it.
Yeah. You really don't see that much. Like people do, like guys being really fired up about their wives.
Yeah. You know, it's like we all have this like a, you know, Rodney Dangerfield mentality of, you know, of marriage.
Yeah, for me it was the opposite. I used to get a lot more bummed out about her when we're like the first year we're together, I might as well have been Rodney Dangerfield. I was like, God damn it, she's driving me crazy. And now it's like really she's like the sweetest person to me.
Oh. That's fantastic.
I think it's almost like the more the dude commits with certain women, the more they're like, okay, I'm going to be really good to you now.
Yeah.
Where before it was the opposite.
Well, you know, it's, you know, look, they're thinking on a whole different level.
They are.
You know, I mean, like, you know, this is one of those conversations that can go on forever with, and we can just, we'll end up throwing up our hands and say, you can't win.
Yeah, there.
You know, that was what my conversations with Jerry were like, and during all the years of Seinfeld, we would talk about these things and up and down and from high and low and every angle possible, and we go, "Eh, you can't win." I'll never forget. You know, like when I bought this, you know, I bought this house, you know, and it was the first house I ever lived in. You know, I'm in New York and apartments my whole life, and. You know, I make this money and I have to live by a house. And the first day I go into work after I moved into the house, I go into Larry and Jerry's office. I said, this house is fantastic. You're like, I can't get married. I can't share this. And Larry says, well, that's the key to having a good marriage is to have a huge house. And Jerry goes, nah, they find you. You know, that's the stuff about Seinfeld that I miss more than anything is those conversations. You know, like just walking in and like, you know, having a conversation like that is just, that's what I really miss.
Yeah. Does he come out here much? You guys stay in touch?
We stay in touch. You know, he does a lot of comedians in cars out here. So it's like a quick one day thing. I actually saw him the last time he was out here totally by accident. And he was at, Intelligentsia, you know, that coffee place in Venice.
Yeah.
And I go there sometimes, and I had hurt my back after playing basketball one night, and this was like a week later, and you know, my back was, I was like in agony, and I walked in there, I said, I just got to drink something hot, you know, and I like that place. It's kind of fun. And yeah, you know, so I went in there and you're like, I see Jerry there, you know, we were chatting for a few minutes and I didn't realize, I was in so much pain that I didn't even realize he was shooting comedians in cars until I was walking out and they had me sign a release.
That's hilarious.
I was so in such, you know, I got like, I strained my back and it turned into sciatica, something like that, which I think would be a good Al Pacino thing because he goes, sciatica. No, I'm just, but you know, like it's so weird that I couldn't even, I didn't even see that there were cameras there.
That's almost like a state of, what's that called? Meditation through pain. Like we're so bombarded with media that how funny is it? Your story just made me be like, oh, that sounds great. Like having sciatica and not noticing anything.
Yeah, I know. That's funny because, you know, like whenever I hear about like people in jail, like in solitary confinement, solitary confinement, I'm always thinking, I think I'd like that.
My brother claims that he's jealous of people in jail. He always gets jealous.
You know, just,
it's like you just get to work out all day, no bills, government pays your rent, you get to write a book about your experiences.
You read a lot.
Yeah.
You can read just about anything. It's not like, you know, it's not like Shawshank where they have 20 books. I mean, there's like a lot of books.
Yeah.
You know?
You're like, you definitely get in shape.
I mean, look at the books like that Mike Tyson read. I mean, he read great stuff.
Yeah. And for,
you know what another thing about jail I don't get though?
What?
Where do they get the tattoos? I mean, is is that like a concession they have there? Is that like something you get at the canteen?
I can ask some people. I know a couple people. But yeah, I mean, they always end up with tattoos.
I don't get it. I mean, and really good work. You know, I mean, Mike Tyson came out of jail and he had this tattoo of Arthur Ashe. And it was beautifully done.
What was his connection with Arthur Ashe?
He read Arthur's book, Days of Grace, and I was friendly with Arthur, so I was very interested in that. I worked with him at ABC Sports, and I actually got a letter from him that arrived 2 days after he died. So I feel this incredible connection to him, and you know, he's like the greatest person I ever met. But yeah, Mike Tyson, he had like that tattoo of Arthur, and it was just like amazing.
Yeah, he's like Tyson seems like an oddly sensitive man.
He's always was, I think.
That's what made him so lethal, because he was so emotional. Like,
yeah.
And I've always thought that. The scariest people I've ever been in contact with are always like on the verge of like tears and like Celine Dion.
Yeah. Ugh.
Like I was telling a fighter I know, a professional boxer, I'm like, don't come out to like hip hop. Come out to like My Heart Will Go On.
Yeah.
I'm like, that will destroy someone's mind.
That would be good.
I would be so scared.
Like, Or like the most depressing song, like, you know, if they came out to like
Leonard
Michael
Cohen.
Jackson singing She's Out of My Life. I see that's the boxer I would root for.
Or what about Leonard Cohen's that everybody knows that your days are numbered?
Yeah.
Everybody. Or just like any kind of heartache where it's, or Bryan Adams, wherever you go, I'll be right there waiting for you.
Oh,
or is that
God.
Richard Marx? Wherever you
like
go.
There's a difference.
And he's just like, Mom. Like, I would seriously be like, I quit. I'm not fighting that lunatic.
You know, Stevie, come out to Stevie Wonder singing Lately. You know,
I don't know that one.
Oh, God. That is, it's a great song. It's actually a great song. It's on.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
That would be really good. I think we're really onto something here. The boxer comes out to like the saddest song in the world.
You know, like, or Simon and Garfunkel's The Boxer.
Yeah. Oh, God. Or Janis Ian at 17. You know that song?
No.
Oh, my God. This is a song that's basically about an ugly girl at 17. I mean, she says the end is like for ugly duckling girls like me. And I always like thought if I saw, you know, she made a fortune on this song. It was like a huge hit. And I always think like, if you saw her and you said, wow, you really are ugly. I mean, would she be offended?
No.
I don't think she'd be offended. I think she'd be okay with it.
Imagine seeing Tyson being like, I'm an ugly duckling too. I'm an ugly duckling like her. Like that dude's about to rip your throat out.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, and the tattoo on the face.
And he was motivated because someone killed his pigeons. You ever hear that story?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's it. Well, I get that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I mean, I have three dogs.
You know, I have a joke in my stand-up where I say that it's really good to date girls with tattoos because then you know going in that you're with someone who's willing to make a huge mistake.
I see what you mean about not laughing. It makes it like when you let the joke just resonate, it's just so funny. That's awesome. Yeah, tattoos really are it lets you know that they've let some things inside of them that they probably shouldn't have.
Yeah. I mean, they're making, you know, lifetime decisions between the ages, you know, between the ages of like 18 and 30, you know, that period of life called stupidity.
Yeah.
They're making these decisions that, you know, are pretty much irreversible.
Do you think that's the thing that now it's not that people are getting more narcissistic. It's just they have a megaphone while they're in the dumb phase.
That's another problem.
Because I probably, if I was 19, I'd probably say some dumb stuff.
Yeah.
I just didn't have an outlet. I had a phone with no caller ID.
God. You know, I'm sure you've gotten this question before when you've been interviewed, but like, do you have, like, people ask you, do you have any regrets? And, you know, I'm always like, of course I have regrets. I've had a great career. And I mean, but, you know, of course I do a million things different, you know.
Right.
I mean, anybody who says they have no regrets is an idiot.
You know,
or they're just kidding themselves.
Yeah.
I mean,
I would regret doing the interview that asked me that. I would say that to him. Yeah, I'd be like, I regret this interview.
Yeah, that was the answer.
Oh, you really?
Shit, where were you? No, that's the answer I should have had. But you know, somebody will ask you that.
Yeah.
Do you have any regrets about your career?
Doing this interview. I don't even think you have an audience. Yeah. Imagine saying that to someone in morning radio. They'd lose their minds. They'd be like, it's Ticker Stop Tuesday here. No, Benjamin, do you have any regrets? Like, being here now.
We are live, right?
Yeah. Yeah, some of those guys. I mean, that's why I like podcasts so much better. Like, I mean, some morning radio is good, but they just, they're always trying to just grab at you. It's like, so I read here that you just...
I know, and they like, you know, sometimes, like, if you're pushing a book, you'll be interviewed by, like, some show in Chicago, and they have to call you at, like, 6 in the morning, and you're like, and they're talking just like that, like a mile a minute, and you're just like... Oh my God.
Oh, check it. Okay. So when we were on Sullivan and Son on TBS, when we were promoting the shows, we'd get up at 3:45 and do a different call in every 15 minutes until 8 a.m.
Oh,
I have like PTSD over that. That's why I like podcasts so much. Because you just like chat. Because people that listen to this like this. They like it. They just want to have a community, like a community where the people don't have to be right there. That's what I listen to. I like listening to podcasts for people just to talk. I cannot stand that tone anymore where it's like, no way. So we hear you met a panda. What's a panda like? I mean, do they really like bamboo? It's just like, speaking of panda, and then you go into the pre-rehearsed bit that you had to do with the producer and you're like, pandas are.
And and it's amazing what passes for a question.
Oh yeah. I used to date an actress and every single time, every question be like, so how big are her tits in real life? And I'm like, how about I just rip you apart, little man?
Oh my God. Oh, that's just painful. I mean, you know, it's so funny because there are so few really, you know, they're not even doing interviews. They're not trying to actually ask an interesting question or a question that they actually have.
Right.
They just want a question.
Yeah.
No, any question will be fine.
They're just like, vocal inflection now?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of comedians that are like that, too.
You ever see those where you can crack the code and you're like,
Yeah. There's a lot of comedians that vocal. I've noticed that there's that vocal inflection. There's like a lot of the same kind of like, you know.
I have a buddy who does an Aziz Ansari impression. It's so funny. He literally will just do any sentence, and he's like, he's got mana. Like he does, like he's Pakistani. Yeah. So he has this thing. He like can do it perfectly. Where you literally are like, I should be laughing now.
Yeah.
Where it does trick you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like
you could be reading the phone book, but as long as you do it in that voice.
Yeah, it's just really weird. It's like, so plants need water. Crazy. I can't even do it. I got to hear him do it again.
As if there is a phone book, by the way. As if anybody's opened the phone book in 30 years. That's where I'm at. That's where I am.
I know. Short people can't even drive anymore.
I know. That's terrible. It's terrible. It's true. That's true.
They need to get actual baby seats.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So where can people get your book?
Amazon is a good place for it.
Oh, yeah.
iBooks or whatever that the Apple thing is, and Barnes & Noble, and it's out in paperback now, so
do you ever,
it's all over the
place.
Have
you thought about doing the Audible, doing reading it?
This is really bizarre. It came out in Audible, and I either wanted to read it myself or Rob Morrow really wanted to read it, you know, the actor.
Yeah.
But when you do it on these Audibles, they do it themselves. You know, they pick out the guy for you.
Yeah, because your voice would be good for that.
My voice would have been perfect for it. I don't know. You know, I could have done such a better job of it.
Yeah.
But, you know.
We should start our own audio company for books.
You know, it's like you got to do everything yourself.
You kind of do.
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, even when you're. You know, like the first book I wrote was kind of a collection of essays that I had written like in the New York Times and LA Times and Esquire and, you know, like a bunch of magazines and newspapers. And, you know, like the literary agent says to me, well, you know, it's kind of hard to sell a collection right now. And I said to him, well, you know, it's kind of really hard to write a collection now. That's how the American economy works. I do a hard part. Now you do a hard part.
Right.
You know, which didn't really ingratiate me to the agent that much. But, you know, like, you know how, like, sometimes you just say things that you know you're going to get screwed by, but it's worth it just to say it.
Oh, yeah. That's my whole life. Are you kidding
me? You want to hear my best one?
Yeah.
I'll give you my best one. One year I was up for the Emmy for having written Yada Yada episode of Seinfeld, and I was up for another Emmy just, you know, because I was a producer on the show, so for best show. So Yada Yada loses to Ellen to the Ellen episode when she comes out of the closet, and Seinfeld, the show, loses to Frasier. So I say to a guy, somebody at the LA Times talking to me, and I said, yeah, I lost to Ellen for coming out of the closet, and I lost to Frasier for never coming out of the closet.
That's amazing.
And I got like, you know, so I got like 2 or 3 days of shit for it, but it was so worth it.
Oh, that's a classic line.
It was so worth it.
The ones that aren't worth it, talk about regrets, are the ones where you're just like, you're an idiot. Because you can't even quote it later.
Right.
Like, that's a funny one. Like, I regret the ones that are just like, where I'm just like mean to someone. I mean, I rarely regret the feeling. I'm like, that person deserved it. Like, I'm not usually just fly off. But, you know, it's better to stay zen about that stuff. But, yeah.
There are very few people who could actually say it and totally get away with it. I mean, I think that's part of the brilliance of, like, Sarah Silverman, that she can get away with anything.
Yeah.
You know, she's just – and there's so much to it. A, you know, like, her jokes are great. And B, her acting is – the way she acts on stage, her acting skills are amazing.
Yeah.
You know, just the way she moves her hands and she understands, like, what her face looks like.
Yeah.
You know, so she can get away with saying the most heinous things. And I'm a huge Sarah Silverman
fan. She's awesome. Very nice, too.
I just think she's, like, brilliant.
Yes. Yeah, I get away with more on stage than in person, I think, because of my extreme height.
Mm.
Like, I think just, like, being, like, 6'7" and...
Are you 6'7"?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, what? I could literally be, like...
Do you have a vertical,
like,
leap at all?
No.
Oh, that's stupid.
I could literally just be like, hey, how you doing? It's like, don't put your hands on me! Like, it's just, like, people assume I'm just attacking them sometimes. Yeah. So it's almost like being a pit bull or a Great Dane. It's like everybody always like wants to protect their dog.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm a piano player. Like, I'm not going to kill you. So then I have to kill him out of like just out of spite. Like at that point, I'm like, now I have to live up to these expectations. So then I have to actually assault someone.
Yeah.
You become what they make you.
I know. Yeah. You know, you ultimately you're going to buy into it.
That's why we just got to end up in solitary.
Yeah. Happy. God, that sounds so, it just sounds like such a relief.
Agreed. Well, this has been awesome. This has actually been one of my longer interviews. We just riffed. It was good.
This was really fun.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm upstairs at the Improv.
Yeah, they just did this. It definitely looks like Sherlock Holmes's attic.
Yeah.
But in a good way. Someone I was interviewing last week said it looked like 1880s wealthy meth.
Yeah.
Because there's like exposed brick, but like a lot of books and leather. It looks like a sugar baron who kind of steps on the crazy train sometimes.
Yeah, and the walls are kind of partially eaten away, you know, like the meth fumes have kind of eaten into the walls.
Yeah. Yeah, and but then there's like really good equipment.
Yeah. A meth lab, that's like a, seems like it would be like a really good breed of a dog.
A meth lab. Is it a black lab? No, it's a meth lab. It's really fast for short periods of time. Like rich people that do meth, they have a meth laboratory.
Yeah. We have a meth institute.
Yeah, it's a meth institute.
Yeah, they're moving up.
I'm a meth actor. Method? No, meth. No, I just do a lot of meth.
Yeah.
I just freak everyone out.
Do the meth, pal.
Yeah. All right. You're the man. Right. Peter Melman. Good hang.